Hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5. The Game, Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning, reacting to a 45-26 win for the Titans yesterday in Indianapolis, taking control of first place in the AFC South. And Joe, we were talking in the last segment about how some of the chatter right now out of Indianapolis is, yeah, the Titans came in here and won, but and didn't have DeForest Buckner, didn't have Autry, didn't have Jonathan Taylor, didn't have all these different guys. And Titans fans, they don't want to hear any of that today. Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Florida Titan text in says, how much credit did Indy deserve after the win in the first game? I think they deserved a lot. I think they got a lot. I don't think it's any different with the Titans today, or it shouldn't be.
I agree. I mean, Frank Reich gave him the credit, man.
He did.
Give Frank Reich credit for blowing that stuff off.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Tyler texts in, if Indy wants to say that stuff about injuries, I think we can make just as strong a case that Brett Kern could have completely flipped the script in that first game as well. Quit your crying, Indy. Brett Kern would have made a big difference in that first game.
Yeah.
Weapon, as we saw again yesterday.
Best player on the team.
I was told by a couple people on Twitter yesterday that if I don't talk about Brett Kern today and give him his proper credit, they will disown me. I said, you don't have to worry about me talking about Brett Kern. I've said time and time again that dude, the best player in the NFL.
Only
half joking.
Wow. Punter awareness is always very important.
It is very important.
You've had two mute issues today.
I have. That's two.
Two zip for you.
We are off to a rough start this week in terms of mute issues. All right, Joe, so the Titans yesterday, and I think back to not only the game yesterday, but also the second half of the game against Baltimore, their offense has gotten back to a point where I consider it to be really dangerous. And we talked about, you know, with Lawan out, the protection issues that they had, the offense just didn't look the same. Derrick Henry's still playing well. He was still putting up numbers, but Tannehill didn't look the same. The points per game wasn't looking the same. And the last six quarters that they've had out there, I guess seven if you want to throw in the overtime as well. I mean, they've just been outstanding. Offensively, Ryan Tannehill looks great. Again, I mean, you look at Tannehill's numbers yesterday, they're not going to blow you away. I mean, he was 13 of 22, 221 yards, one touchdown, no picks. I thought Tannehill was awesome yesterday. Didn't have to do a whole lot, but I think when he did, he played really well. Derrick Henry, we've talked about, was outstanding. The offensive line was incredible with Quisenberry coming in at left tackle. This offense, to me, the last seven quarters, feels like one of the top five offenses in the league once again. And quite frankly, I'd never thought they'd get back to that point with Lawan out.
I agree. I'm sorry. I got distracted while you were talking. Did you see the Tom Brady press conference yesterday?
No.
So he's dyeing his hair black?
Is that what's happening?
Holy crap. Wait till you guys see this. It's like, it's incredible. Like, his hair is jet black now. Look, he's trying to look like he's 15.
You ever heard of Florida Man? Get down there, start doing some stuff, man.
Good Lord. All right, I'm sorry.
It's
yeah.
Okay.
That was just freaked me out. Now, listen.
Scarred for life, Brady's hair.
What? Wait till you see this. It's crazy. Like, it's a one-week
change. I see
change.
It right there. His hair looks fine.
Okay.
Doesn't look any different. Maybe it was the Zoom.
Maybe it's the TV, the Zoom. I tell you what, I wish you would have turned around when you were talking. It's right in my face. Listen, the Titans offense, I still think you got moving forward. I mean, there's some things in some matchups where if you had Lawan, you would be able to do more things. I mean,
sure.
It makes a difference. But I think they figured some things out. I think the run blocking is really good. And honestly, I don't know that it's – I can't watch yesterday or even just, like you said, those last six quarters, or really most of the time without Lawan, and think that that's taken that big of a hit. You know, I think in some of those games, the defense has not allowed them to run the ball like they'd like to. So the running game, I think, is there. But now, if you get that protection, I mean, Vrabel said it yesterday, you know, to paraphrase, like, when we get protection, we usually complete passes. You know, and he's obviously right. And if they've got that figured out, if they can figure it out and kind of, you know, give extra help when they need to, because they will at times, but still feel that confidence, I think it affects Tannehill positively, and it seems like he's gotten over, if he was, you know, whatever word you want to use, skittish, unsure, you know, just a little bit too sped up at times, I don't think he is anymore.
I don't think he is either, and you could see it in his play, and I talked about Friday, like, you got to make the throws that are available to you. And I quite honestly anticipated he would be under more pressure than he was in this game. Now, the running game had a lot to do with that. And Derrick Henry, I mean, when you're getting 7 yards a pop from your running back, you're going to be in pretty good shape offensively. But Tannehill, I thought every throw for the most part that was available to him yesterday, he made. And he made the right decision. And you brought it up earlier. We haven't talked about it a lot yet. But that fourth down play to Corey Davis when it's 28-14, they bring out the punting team like they're going to try to pin the Colts deep. Vrabel calls a timeout and throws the offense back on the field. And Tannehill throws that ball to Corey Davis. And Corey Davis, I mean, that ball was probably literally 3 inches off the ground. And he makes the catch, gets up, gets the ball down to the two or the one right around the goal line. That, to me, was a huge play in the game. And I think an aggressive call by Vrabel to try to put the death knell in the Colts there.
It was. And there's a risk there because if you don't get it, you could have also, I mean, you could have tried a 55-yarder from Gostkowski. And honestly, he's good, 50-plus.
He's got the leg.
Indoors, you could have made that case. But then if you miss it now, the Colts have it at like the 45 with about 27 seconds left. Certainly time to get a field goal. You're in a risk there of them being able to get three and also, of course, doubling up on that because they get the ball, start the second half. And you like a basically brand-new game early in the third quarter, you know, if you mess this up. But to me, that was the right call, and not just because it worked. I think it was the time to try to bury them, trust your offense. Vrabel did it, and it reminded me a little bit. I don't know if you saw the Chiefs-Bucks game yesterday, but, I mean, almost no one does what the Chiefs did at the end of the game,
yeah,
throwing the ball when they did. Yeah. But, like, eh.
And you have Mahomes.
Yeah.
You'll do it.
Let the best player in the league make a play, and he did, and then the Bucks are done. Conventionally, no one does that. They run it, and then they punt, and the Bucks are pinned with, like, 25 seconds, and they probably don't get it. But instead, win it and risk stopping the clock and actually giving Brady real time to do it. Like, the Chiefs are the only team in the league that, like, I almost expect that from now. But, like, this is an example of the Titans. When your offense is rolling like this and it's this good, go ahead and use the best part of your team to batter an opponent. And so I love the call. And it's great catch by Davis, but also it's Tannehill in that moment expecting to go to Firkser. Colts did a great job, and he goes to the second read and makes the play.
And the Titans offense, I mean, it was so explosive yesterday, and I still think one of the best weapons they have on offense not really being utilized all that much, at least in the passing game. And to that point, let's go to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ron texts in and says, I know Jonnu Smith's new role is blocking since Lawan has been out, but he's too explosive to be stuck blocking every game, even though he's probably the best option for it right now. Jonnu Smith, he didn't have a catch yesterday in that game against the Colts, and I agree with Ron. I think he's one of the most explosive options they have offensively, and right now he's not even really a factor on this Titans offense in the receiving game, and they were still able to be as productive yesterday as they were offensively.
Here are four Titans who had targets. Kari Blasingame, Firkser, Jeremy McNichols, Khalif Raymond. Jonnu Smith did not have one.
No.
No targets for Jonnu Smith, which is crazy, and I agree. Now, it's 45-26 for a final, so it's not – like, there's no reason to complain about it. It's also you think about when he does get involved. You think about Adam Humphries coming back. Again, if this offensive line holds up, like, if Questenberry is as good as I think he is after watching him here for a game and two series, you know, then this offense looks like it could really be a problem for people moving forward.
Well, especially when you factor in the schedule, because the last few weeks have just been a barn burner for the Titans in terms of the defenses they're going up against. I mean, the Colts defense, really good, even though they had some losses in this game. Ravens defense is good. The Bears, the Steelers, they played a lot of good defenses recently. I mean, the Browns defense is okay. They're not bad. But then you have the Jags, the Lions. The Packers don't have a good defense. The Texans don't have a good defense. They got a chance as they close out the regular season here to put up some pretty good numbers and a lot of points offensively.
Yeah, no doubt. It's been a heck of a stretch, really, of defenses, and a lot of them that can get after the passer too. So it's about to get easier. And, of course, if the Titans think that way, then what happens often in this league will probably happen to them. But bottom line is it is about to get easier. The Browns are a middle-of-the-pack defense, and the Browns do have pass rush. So this is another test of that. It's another week of having to go up against some really top pass rushers. And, you know, frankly, a lot tougher than it was Sunday because no Autry and no Buckner inside. But the Browns overall are so-so defensively. And then it takes a nosedive for a little bit.
When we come back, what did we make of the matchup yesterday between Phillip Rivers and Ryan Tannehill? We'll discuss that on the other side. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
You know, pretty early on with the way you guys are moving the ball and some of the push you're getting up front, did you get a pretty good sense this was going to be a good day for the offense and Derek in particular? And why was today so different from the first meeting?
Yeah, it felt good. You know, anytime the O-line's getting movement and get Derek going, it's a good thing for the Titans. You know, that's the way we like to play. I think we're at our best, obviously, whenever Derek's rolling. And when the O-line's consistently getting movement up front and Derek's getting to the linebackers clean, you know, that's when you're going to see big games out of Derek in the run game. So felt good early on, and they just kind of kept it going the whole game.
That was Titans quarterback Ryan Tannehill after the game yesterday, a 45-26 win for the Titans in Indianapolis. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you. And Joe, you look at the box score, like it's not an overly impressive number from Tannehill yesterday. 13 of 22, finished with 221 yards, one touchdown, quarterback rating of 108.3. But, I mean, he didn't have to do a whole lot yesterday. Derrick Henry was dominating on the ground, 27 carries, 178 yards, three touchdowns. Now, I will say, Tannehill could have had two touchdowns yesterday. It was about a yard away from being a forward pass to Derrick Henry instead of a lateral. So maybe your numbers look a little bit better then. But I thought Tannehill was pretty good yesterday. When they needed him to make some plays and make some throws, he did. And I thought maybe most importantly, his decision-making with the ball was outstanding. Another good game for Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah, I thought he was great. You know, and I think Tannehill, again, we're talking about that, like you said earlier, sort of the last six quarters, you can count the one overtime possession. But it's like he's been different. This offense has been different. I don't know what happened in the first half at Baltimore. Everybody is entitled to a few bad throws in series, but it's like he's just kind of snapped back to what he was doing before all that. And he's sitting there right now, what is he, sixth in the league in rating, 106.7 rating, 2,600 yards, 23 touchdowns, four picks. You know, 65%. I mean, he was 70 last year. You know, that's unrealistic, but he looks to be in command again. And I thought he played better than those numbers suggest. But when you can run 45 times for 229 yards as a team in a National Football League game,
yeah,
then you don't need all that much from your quarterback.
And then on the other side, Phillip Rivers, 24 of 42 yesterday, 295 yards, two touchdowns, one interception. Probably could have had at least two or three more interceptions yesterday from Phillip Rivers. I thought yesterday a classic case of if you get up in the game and you're able to make the Colts offense, but more specifically Phillip Rivers, one-dimensional, he's going to telegraph some throws. I thought he did that yesterday. The Titans defense didn't take advantage of it as much as they probably should have, but I didn't think Phillip Rivers was all that great yesterday.
No, he wasn't. And I think his biggest play, so he had a 50-yarder to T.Y. Hilton,
yeah,
which initially was a fumble, but it, you know, he was down. That was a great example of, I mean, it turned out to be good because, obviously the underthrow works a lot there, but that was just, it wasn't like an intentional underthrow. It was just a dying duck.
He just chucked it.
That, you know, T.Y. Hilton had to come back to get. Hey, it worked out for him, but there's an example of he just can't do that anymore like he used to, you know? And so he's limited. Plus, like you said, he telegraphs stuff. And when you put him in a situation where he has to throw, it's not ideal for them. And, I mean, look, he's fine. But I thought all along this was the difference in these teams was the quarterback, and I completely think the same thing after watching him play twice. And Rivers cut up the Titans in the first game. So he can do what he does well, very well, if you let him. And I think the Titans did a much better job of not letting him.
I thought they did too. And, you know, Rivers, when you look at his game yesterday, it was one of those games where I thought back to his time with San Diego where a lot of frustration in the game. You could tell when the Titans especially during that stretch where they were, I think, 7 possessions, 54 yards. There's a lot of frustration on Phillip Rivers' face. A lot of whining, a lot of yelling at the teammates, a lot of yelling at the officials. When you can get in his head that way, I think he's more prone to making mistakes. And I thought that's what the Titans did yesterday. They got in his head. They got in the offense's head for Indianapolis. And one of the best performances of the year defensively. Like, you look at the numbers, and they're not awesome. Like, T.Y. Hilton, 81 yards. Thought he looked pretty good yesterday. Phillip Rivers, almost 300 yards passing. But the Titans, by and large, did exactly what they needed to do defensively to keep Phillip Rivers and that team off balance. And certainly, you get 45 points, you feel pretty good about your chances.
Yeah, he's quite a sore loser. There's no doubt about it. You know, Peyton Manning used to yell at his teammates a lot too, and Tom Brady. But for whatever reason, it's more grating with Phillip Rivers, I feel like.
He's a little bit more demonstrative.
Is that what it is?
Yeah,
he's a trash talker.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's barking at everybody over there. He was really mad, and I'm sure Titans fans enjoyed the heck out of that. Yeah. I see the smile curling on Ryan Poore's face right now.
There aren't five things that I enjoy more watching football than watching Phillip Rivers pout, especially when it's against the Titans.
That's top five. That's a top five enjoyment of football for you.
Without a doubt.
Wow. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
Okay. So let me ask you this. Is Ryan Tannehill the best quarterback in this division? I think we would both agree that, no disrespect to Jake Luton and Mike Glennon down there in Jacksonville, but they're not part of this conversation. We would agree he's better than Phillip Rivers. Is Ryan Tannehill the best quarterback right now in the AFC South with Deshaun Watson in the mix?
That's a good question. I mean, I think it's one of the, it's sort of like how you want to ask that. Like, if it's, okay, you can have one of these guys for the next 7 years, you know, then I would go Watson.
Yeah.
That's a really good question. I would say right now, the way he's playing in his offense, which I know is a lot of qualifying, I would say Tannehill is. I think Watson is special. And he does a lot of things on his own that most people can't do. And I still think he can get better. And maybe Tannehill's about at his ceiling. Like, I don't think, right? I mean, Tannehill's really good.
He's pretty good right now, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want a whole lot more than what he's given you. But right now, I think I would say yes. Again, I would say if the question is more like, who are you taking because of age also, I would go with Watson. If that's my wishy-washy answer for you.
That was nice.
Yeah.
Covering all sides of the ports?
Yeah, cover all the bases.
Is Tannehill the best quarterback in the AFC South right now?
I love Tannehill, but no.
You're giving it to Watson?
I'm giving that to Deshaun Watson.
It's fair. I mean, I think it's close. You know, I think it's close right at this exact moment.
Well, let me tell you this. The fact that we're having this discussion and that this is a question, good news for the Titans. Because, look, we all know how good Deshaun Watson is, and they're different. I mean, Deshaun Watson, he can make plays out of nothing by himself. So I don't know if Tannehill's quite like that. I would probably give the edge to Watson a little bit. But just the way that Tannehill fits into this offense, I think there's no question that right now he's playing at a higher level. Now, a lot of that has to do with Houston making the decision to trade away Watson's best weapon. And if the Titans traded away Derrick Henry, probably looks a little different right now for Ryan Tannehill. But the last six quarters, he looks like Ryan Tannehill of the first 4 or 5 weeks of this season. And if he looks like this, look, they've got a shot. Like, everybody keeps just talking about the Chiefs, and I get it, and I would still pick the Chiefs to come out of the AFC. I think they're the best team. But if Tannehill's playing like this, and you can get your offense to block the way they did yesterday and have Derrick Henry playing at this level, you give yourself a shot in the AFC. Whereas, honestly, a couple weeks ago, when we were talking about the AFC, I didn't really see a path for the Titans. I'm starting to see one now.
We're such overreactors.
Are we?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm with you. But it's how this league goes, too. You know, it's like it's doom and gloom 2 weeks ago. And now it's – I mean, I wrote Chiefs stuff in my column today. You know, it's like you start thinking about that all of a sudden. And I don't disagree with you. I do. I did watch Tyreek Hill have 203 yards in the first quarter yesterday.
I think they eventually decided going man-to-man on him probably not a good idea.
Gosh, just unbelievable.
It only took 220 yards.
What do you know? He didn't get 300, did he?
No, he's about 270.
Yeah, that's too bad. They should have gotten him a 300-yard game. But, look, Who's the biggest challenger to the Chiefs? Because it is the Chiefs. They are the best. They're the best team in the NFL. They're the favorite to win the Super Bowl. But who's the biggest challenger in the AFC to the Chiefs? Large percentage of people around the NFL would say Pittsburgh, and I think that's fair. But I watched the Titans of Pittsburgh play too, and I think if the Titans have got some stuff figured out the way it looks like they are doing right now, I'd be very interested to watch that game. I think it could be a heck of a game. And I'm not sure the Titans wouldn't win that game by – a touchdown or more.
Really?
Well, I mean, look, if they played 10 times, Titans and Steelers played 10 times, you know, like in a neutral field, what would be the outcome right now?
5-5.
That's probably about right. I think I'd agree with that. I think they're very close. No? You, Porth?
I'd say 6 or 7 to Pittsburgh.
Yeah? Okay.
I don't know, though. You look at that schedule Pittsburgh's played, it's rough.
It's just,
I don't know how good they are.
I mean, honestly, I think the Titans are inching toward okay on defense. I mean, you don't want to overstate it and go beyond that, but they were very not okay on defense in that game and in a lot of the early part of the season. I think they're getting close to okay here. And if they're okay, I mean, that game was one of those games, like a few this season, where Henry can't be part of it because the defense can't get off the field in the fourth quarter.
Well, and you don't have Jonathan Joseph on the field now for Big Ben to just sit there and pick on.
Right. It's like, okay, is Jonathan Joseph or Ty Smith? Which one? Whoever's on the field, I'm going to throw there.
Yeah.
I mean, that alone has gotten better.
Yeah.
But, I'm not arguing like 6-4, sure. I mean, it's close, but it's not 9 or 8 or 9 for the Steelers. And I think a lot of the league might think it is, but I don't think that's reality.
Is it 8 or 9 for the Chiefs?
Against the Titans?
I would say so.
Yeah.
I think it's 8 or 9 for the Chiefs, probably against anybody in the league right now. I mean, they're just that good.
Or 9 or 10.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say about, I'd go 8-2 Chiefs. But if you got a, what is that? Let me do the math. 20% chance? Hey, you'd love to have the chance again.
That was good. Some Michigan State math coming through there for Joe Rexroad. When we come back, some more breaking news over the weekend regarding Vanderbilt athletics. A huge change made for the Vanderbilt football program. Adam Sparks from the Tennessean will join us next. We'll discuss that coming up. This is Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning. And some big news for the Vanderbilt football program over the weekend. And help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And bring in Adam Sparks from the Tennessee. And Adam, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Busy, busy, busy week, right, guys?
I would say so.
Supposed to be UT week this past week. I don't know how we got off track on that.
Good point.
Lots of things going on. Adam Sparks has been a busy man. And Adam, we'll start with the news of the day. Derek Mason fired yesterday. We're sitting there watching the Titans game. The news comes out that Vanderbilt is moving in a different direction. What was your reaction to Derek Mason being fired, and why make the move now?
Well, I thought over maybe the past week this was going to happen. It was just a matter of when it was going to happen. I think the changing of the UT game affected the date to some extent. Under the previous schedule, they would have played UT this past Saturday, and then you could have made a decision or an announcement after that. That's a game that Derek Mason had the most success of any Vandy coach in a century, really. You give him that game, see if maybe he can win it. If he doesn't, you make the announcement when you did yesterday. When the game got moved to either the 12th or the 19th, then you just couldn't wait that long because then signing day starts on the 16th, signing period does, and so you'd have those recruits in limbo or maybe lose almost all the class. So that sped up the decision to now, and it didn't shock me. It does tell you a little bit that Vandy maybe is moving in a little bit of different direction the past few years, because they fired Bryce Drew with a different AD, granted, but fired Bryce Drew with 3 years left in his contract. Derek Mason, I think, had 3 left in his contract, and so the idea of Vandy firing only coaches as lame duck coaches whose contracts are about to expire, that narrative may be running a little old now.
That's a good point. I mean, at some point, everyone in college athletics is going to fire people and then pay them for years afterward, right? I mean, it's like college athletics tradition. But, Adam, I want to get right to your thoughts instantly. How about your first thought of who should be the next coach, or who you think might be the next coach? What are the names that are jumping out at you?
Well, those are two different questions, because the first guy that jumps out to me is Clark Lee, the Notre Dame defensive coordinator, former Vandy player from this area, tied into Nashville Steel with family and elsewhere. That seems to be the obvious guy. He's at 38 years old. He would fit in instantly as a guy that will be a candidate for other jobs. But as you and I know, usually the guy that you think would be the perfect fit is not the guy that ends up with it. Either they're not interested, or something in the interview process goes awry. It's just rarely the guy that you think. And I think at Vanderbilt that's the case too. I think the more important thing is who wants the job, and you know, what kind of job is this? I mean, you know, Will Healy, does he come looking this way? He's pretty young. He's an up-and-coming coach, but this, you know, he's 35 years old. Jamie Chadwell has an undefeated team at Coastal Carolina. He's in his 30s, I believe. Both of those guys could say, hey, this is my next step. This is an SEC job, albeit a low SEC job. But they could also look at it and say, I'm on the rise, and I could be jumping to some other school within the next year or so. If I go to Vanderbilt and I don't succeed to the extent that you need to there, maybe to a James Franklin level or a little under that, then I stop everything in my career. So there is a little bit of a cautious approach with some coaches. I'm interested if they look at Charlie Strong. I know people think he's kind of past his prime, but, you know, he was a head coach for a long time. It brings instant credibility to the position. He's a guy that pretty much had the job back in the early 2000s. And if you've read things about Charlie Strong over the years, he said there was some hesitation, the fact he was an African-American coach and some of his background there. You know, that's not the case now. The last 10 years they've had two African-American coaches. I think that'll still be a consideration here. Charlie Strong's at Alabama as an analyst. The Nick Saban, you know, reboot your coaching career, head coaching career prospects. He's in that program there, and maybe they look at him.
Oh, Butch is too, so I mean – who knows, right? I mean, any Nick Saban analyst intern could be. How about that? What fun would that be?
That sounds like a good reality show, right? You go in and hand a rose to whichever Nick Saban analyst is out there for you.
Oh, man, that's actually a great idea. Well, you hit a point there, Adam, that I want to follow up on, because a year ago, Malcolm Turner was the AD, and he put out a statement about why he didn't fire Derek Mason after that 3-9 season, or maybe it was like late in the 3-9 season, but, you know, the loss to UNLV. I mean, there was momentum for it, but I thought he made a fair point, which is you can keep kicking the can and changing coaches, but you've got to change what this is, and you got to build the infrastructure and facilities and fundraising, all the things we talk about over and over with Vanderbilt. So do you think that ends up, I guess, deterring, you know, possible good candidates here? I mean, I know that if I was one of those people, I would be asking all those questions.
Well, I think if they had kept Derek Mason, it would have been reasonable from that standpoint that you're saying. I think there's also an element, though, of kicking two cans down the road. Well, we can't do, you know, we can't fire the coach because we've got to do something with facilities. Well, there's no use to do anything with facilities until we get the right coach. And I think that's kind of in the predicament that they were in. You know, if you're a pessimist, you look at this and say, well, they're just going to get a new coach, and that's going to give them another, you know, 3, 4, 5 years to do anything with facilities, because they have their coach. What do they need to do facilities to attract a coach? They already have one, a new one. On the other hand, you could see that from the positive side of, if you are trying to get the right coach, you're going to have to follow through on some of these promises with facilities. Otherwise, you know, you could lose them, or you're going to have something more concrete on paper to get the right person. It's always going to be the question at Vandy with facilities. I think the big question is if Candace Lee can get something done with that. You know, I've got a piece on Tennessean.com right now we put up this morning about what the new coach needs to know. And, you know, number one on that list is you will be promised facilities in the interview process. Keep in mind, those have been promised for decades, and they've rarely been delivered. James Franklin got an indoor practice facility. He got that after 3 years, and he actually didn't see it to complete fruition, but he got that. That's about the only example over decades that something has come through. So they're going to have to be cautious about that, and anybody that comes for that job is going to hear that. And then they're going to make a few phone calls and say, you were promised this also, right? They didn't come through with it. You know, Candace Lee's got to be believable on this.
Adam Sparks from the Tennessean on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHunted.com. So, Adam, where does Derek Mason go from here? What do you think his future looks like in college football?
College football probably, maybe the NFL. He had a little time with the Vikings back in the day. I think some of his, some of his philosophy and his 3-4 scheme, and I think he can make a really good secondary coach. Some of that ties as much to the NFL, I think, as college. But, it's funny when you see these things is that, and I know Twitter isn't real life, but you see it is somewhat perception. And since he got fired, you saw people that said, okay, it's about time or he needed to go or something. And then you also saw everybody else in the SEC around college football fans say, okay, now go get him as our defensive coordinator. So he's respected as that type of guy. I think he's going to have a few paths. He could be a DC at a Power 5 job. I don't think you'll have trouble getting that. He could be a head coach at a mid-major. I think that may take a year. He may sit out for a little while, or he could end up a position coach in the NFL. I think he's going to have some pretty good options.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think, like you said, he'd be a DC right now very successfully. That's how he got this job. And I hope Derek Mason gets another chance to be head coach. I'd love to see Derek Mason as a head coach at a place that isn't way behind its conference peers in terms of resources. I mean, that's just the reality of this job. Adam, meanwhile, history was made Saturday, and the news just won't stop coming on your beat here, but Sarah Fuller, the first woman to take a snap in a Power 5 game, obviously a massive news story nationally. Also, some reaction to that, which just made me want to pull the rest of my hair out. So I'm asking you for help to, first of all, like the idiotic stuff about like this is like some publicity stunt to try to save Mason's job or whatever. Just please help me debunk that. But also, what was your overall reaction to the story, the situation, the reaction?
I never like to help you on social media. I love to see you just get in a fist fight. And I'll sit on the sideline.
I know you do. I know you do.
I mean, there's so much nuance in this. And, I asked Derek Mason the lead question in the press conference the other day about if this was a social statement or a football decision. And here's kind of where I'll go with this, is it was a football decision. They didn't have students on campus. There's not a men's soccer team. She's a viable option. She can kick. They went with her, and I think they'll go with her again this week. And it was a viable football option, but he also understood the social statement of it. You can have the benefit, so to speak, of it being a social statement that you agree with, and Derek Mason liked the fact of that, but that not be your major motive. So it's somewhere in between. He did it for a football thing, but it ended up being something different. It's, there's far extremes on this. It's, they brought her in to be the kicker, and that's fine. It's not, I think some people are jumping to the conclusion that, next year it's going to be, 50-50 men and women on college football teams. That's not going to happen. She's a kicker. She's a capable athlete. As far as the safety things go, she's 6'2" and strong, and it's fine. It's fine. That's usually what I ask people when they call me and they say, "What do you think about this?" And I just say, "It's fine. What else do you want me to say?" Can she kick? Here's the thing we need to judge it on: can she kick? Aside from the social statements, if she can kick, then she needs to be out there. We haven't seen much of it aside from practice and one squib kick she had. If she can't kick to the, to what they need her to do, then she's not going to be there much longer. That's how you would judge a guy. That's how they'll judge her. Right now, she looks to be their best option.
Adam Sparks from the Tennessean on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHunted.com. And Adam, I want to toss something your way, a name that you've thrown out there in terms of a potential coaching candidate for Vanderbilt, and that is Jeff Fisher, former Titans head coach. What do you make of maybe that match between Jeff Fisher and Vanderbilt?
Could he succeed there? Maybe, probably. I mean, whatever success is at Vandy now. Here's the thing with Jeff Fisher, though, is that I've heard Jeff Fisher's name thrown around 100 times over the last, I'd say, 3 years. And 100 out of 100 has come from somebody seeking that job for Jeff Fisher. Well-intended, you know, people around him, saying, I think he should get the job, he'd be a good fit for the job. I haven't heard any from the Vandy side. So, you know, if you're looking to go out on a date and, you know, one person is texting and calling and emailing and whatever they do now, one person's doing it and the other one hasn't yet, I tend to think the chances are less. Could he be a candidate? Yeah, I've only heard it from Jeff Fisher's camp. I haven't heard any of that from Vanderbilt's camp.
That sounds about right.
Adam Sparks from the Tennessean has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Adam, great stuff, man. We appreciate you taking time to join us.
All right, guys. Y'all have a good one.
Absolutely. When we come back, we'll react to the firing of Derek Mason and hear from you, Vandy fans. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025 on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Where does Vanderbilt go from here? That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks to Adam Sparks from the Tennessean for joining us in the last segment. And Joe, Derek Mason out as Vanderbilt head coach after 7 seasons at Vandy. You broke this story yesterday, so congratulations to you. Here's your pat on the back from me, your co-host.
Thank you. So nice of you. I appreciate it.
That's what I'm here for. How surprised were you that they made the move when they did, and where do you think Vanderbilt goes from here? And I'm not asking for maybe a specific guy, but if you're Vanderbilt, what are you looking for in your next head coach? What are the boxes that the next head coach needs to check, in your opinion?
Okay, let me go with a box I think is overrated, and we've talked about this with Tennessee. It's the must-be-a-Vanderbilt person box. You know, like the link. I mean, now I do think that Clark Lee is an intriguing candidate because he's had a very good career. He's young. He's tight with Tim Corbin. He's from around here. So I think he's a good candidate, but the part about it that I care about less is the Vanderbilt part. Now, I understand. Now, some Vanderbilt fans will say yes, but because he's a Vanderbilt guy, if he has success like James Franklin did, maybe he'll stay. But I don't think that's – you can't look at it that way to me.
Why don't you just worry about having success first?
Have the success, yes. Have the success. If you have the success, you know, you can get an indoor thing built like Franklin did. Maybe it's something else. You know, it's the football building, whatever it is. Have the success. It's going to be a stepping stone job for a lot of guys. It just is. So to me, that's a box that is way down the list, not just for Vanderbilt, for a lot of places. I will counter that a little bit and say I understand why at Vanderbilt it might be a little more important than some places, right? Because it is a different place. It's a private school. It's not like these other schools in the SEC. You've got different challenges that they don't have. So it's good to know the lay of the land. And, again, the relationships Clark Lee has, I think that's good. But I still – here's a big box for me with this job is offense. I want someone who is an innovative offensive mind because I think that you have to compensate for the talent gap in some ways. And I think there are a lot of options out there for that. I mean, I wrote the column yesterday – on Derek Mason being fired. I threw out the two names. Adam mentioned both of them, Will Healy and Jamie Chadwell. And Chadwell, by the way, is 43, but that's a guy who's had a lot of success. If anybody's watched Coastal Carolina, it is a fascinating team to watch. It's sort of like triple option, but it's like triple option with the ability to throw the ball too. And they just, I mean, they are so creative, so fun. I mean, to me, it's also – that's not the top priority. It's down the list, but be entertaining.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I've subscribed to what I've heard from a lot of people over the years. Why can't the triple option work here? Wouldn't the triple option, you know, sort of like Georgia Tech, and I think that they had pretty good success, and then eventually it wasn't working. You know, teams got used to it, and they just, I mean, the program just sort of eroded there. But I like that idea. I like a different kind of offense. But there's other guys out there. You have Healy, who is a young guy. His uncle was a Vanderbilt legend. He's a Tennessee guy. I think the recruiting aspect, the energy aspect, he is very intriguing. And he's a guy who, I mean, look, he's going to be a Power 5 football coach in the future, in the not-so-distant future. Would he be interested in this job? I believe he would have interest in this job, and I think that could work. I also look at even like a Josh Gattis at Michigan. Hasn't gone well at Michigan, but that's another offensive guy who has been at Vanderbilt. Again, not the most important thing, but, you know, coaches like that, I just – and so Clark Lee, the defensive guy, I'm not saying you rule out that, but I like the idea of a different kind of offense to, one, compensate for the talent gap, and two, I think just be more entertaining, be more fun, and I think you can help your recruiting that way too.
Yeah, and look, the biggest thing this move signals to me in my hope for Vanderbilt is that it revitalizes the fan base, because, I mean, let's be honest, the fan base this year, heading into this year with Derek Mason, a lot of them were checked out from the beginning. They wanted Derek Mason fired after last year. And when that didn't happen, there was a lot of apathy. There was a lot of, you know, talk to me again once Derek Mason's out, and I'll be back at Vanderbilt watching football games. And look, I think Derek Mason's a good football coach. I think he's going to find another spot either as a defensive coordinator in college football or maybe a position coach in the NFL, like Adam Sparks said in our last segment. I'm not sure how good of a head coach Derek Mason is, but I do know this, and some of this is his fault. Some of this, I think, is just on Vanderbilt, the institution themselves, but the fan base was totally checked out with Derek Mason right now. And now I think a lot of Vandy fans today are feeling revitalized and they're excited about what the future could look like. But I was talking about this with some of my friends yesterday who are big-time Vandy fans. I don't know how much this is going to change until the environment at Vanderbilt changes. Like, you can go out and hire whoever you want to hire, but I'm not sure how much of this is going to look different until you change the environment. Now, I do think Adam brought up a good point. You can do two things at once. You can bring in a different coach and try to change the environment, change the facilities, all that stuff. But the facilities, I mean, it's a big deal. They are way behind. You've got disadvantages at Vanderbilt anyway. And coaches, especially coaches who are on the rise, they don't want to be in a position where it's very easy for them to fail. Like, it takes almost a superhuman effort to succeed at Vanderbilt. I think that's going to hurt them a lot in this coaching search. And until that environment gets changed, I'm not sure how much the result on the field is going to change all that much, regardless of who the coach is.
Yeah. Now, look, I will say this on the other side of that. If you're a coach looking at this job, you know that success means what? 6-6? I mean, those were the years we celebrated Derek Mason for. So you know the expectations are low. Also, you look at this job and you say, Vanderbilt, the university, the degree recruits for itself to a certain extent. Nashville is absolutely something that is enticing, that can help you. And playing in the SEC. I mean, those are things that Vanderbilt has been able to sell and still get some pretty good players in here under Derek Mason, even with all those disadvantages. I think it is important through this, and I know that there are some things that have changed. Certainly the fundraising situation at Vanderbilt has changed. It used to be, I think, about as almost unbelievably bad. And actually, Adam and I at the Tennessean, worked on this stuff a few years ago on, university fundraisers, and one in particular. But really, it was sort of this unwritten rule of, you don't touch our donors.
Right.
Most schools, they're trying to double up. I mean, of course, it's still competitive between university and athletics fundraisers at schools, but there's no like, oh, no, that's off limits to you. That's crushing. For an athletic department to have limitations like that, those are not in place, is my understanding. It's a better environment. There is some momentum. I wonder how much this will help momentum. I think it could. But I agree with you. Like, you've got to do more than say, "Hey, we're gonna," when you're talking to whoever, "Hey, we're gonna do something. We're gonna get some things turned around." I think it would be huge in the near future for Vanderbilt to be able to also say, here's what we've been talking about, here's where we are on it, and here's our plan for this. If they could do that in tandem with this coaching search, then I think you really have a reason for Vanderbilt fans to tune back in. And I don't blame anybody who's been tuned out on football. It's been hard to watch the last couple seasons.
I'm going to throw two names out at you, and both of these names were in Adam Sparks' piece yesterday. And look, the first one is obvious. It's James Franklin. And that's what, once Derek Mason was fired yesterday, a lot of Vanderbilt fans, they started tweeting at James Franklin. Now look, James Franklin's still at Penn State, obviously. He'd have to be fired first. But if he is, and things don't work out at Penn State, do you think there's any chance whatsoever James Franklin ends up back at Vanderbilt?
I really don't. I'd be shocked that he would want to. I don't think – I mean, I think that there's some people at Vanderbilt who don't like him. There's some who do like him. Obviously, like Tim Corbin's still like his best friend.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff that went down, obviously, in his tenure. I don't think it would work out. And also, I don't think Penn State's going to fire James Franklin. I think winning at Michigan helped him. It's been obviously a terrible season, but I don't think he's going to be fired there. So I don't – I understand it. I didn't know that Vandy fans were tweeting at him. That's interesting.
Oh, lots of them yesterday.
Vandy Twitter. I love
it. They were reactivated. A lot of come home, whole bunch of
come
stuff.
Come home,
yeah.
Yeah. Jimmy Frank.
We miss you. We love you.
Yeah. I understand why people would go there, but I don't think that's a serious conversation. What's the other one?
The other one is Jeff Fisher, and that is also a name that Adam Sparks has thrown out in this piece, and as we discussed in the last segment, maybe a one-sided conversation coming from Jeff Fisher's camp. What do you make of maybe the former Titans coach heading over to Vanderbilt? Do you think that would have a chance of working?
Well, I mean, I guess I could see it having a chance of working. I mean, you know, he's a good football coach. You know, he knows Nashville. I could see Jeff Fisher being a good recruiter, but he's also like, when's the last time he recruited someone? You know, it's like, to me, I think if you're Vanderbilt, you're much more interested in the young, rising college coach who has been a college head coach recently. It is a different deal than coaching the NFL. So, as Adam said, there's no question Jeff Fisher's interested. There's zero question about that. And there has been zero question about that for a few years now. I'd be surprised if Vanderbilt is interested in him. I will be interested this week to dig in on that and see if I can find anything out. But I think it is one-sided.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Josh in Clarksville text in, they better hire Saban or it was a huge mistake.
Hey, Nick, he's got his dealership here.
He does.
Come on home, Nick.
Sark looked good the other day with that team against Auburn. Alabama's in good hands.
That's right. Yeah, they don't need you. They don't need Saban. Alabama, give Vanderbilt Saban.
When we come back, we'll dive back into the Titans, react to their big win in Indianapolis. Corey Curtis from News 2 will join us. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.